Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
That'd be us. That's our cues. Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Happy Cinco de Mayo and Taco Tuesday.
Yeah, that's a nice...
How often does that happen?
I don't know, probably once every 7 years,
probably
6 years.
Maybe six with a leap year.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So I don't celebrate it, but you said you were going to celebrate it.
I don't know if we normally celebrate it, but we have a housewarming party to go to tonight, and so that is the theme.
So you're not dry anything after, like, you did dry January, right? Is that what you did?
No.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I just made fun of you for wanting to do
super wet January, which I'm
judging people who want to take a break from drinking.
I'm actually thinking of, this is how I think, because I love to antagonize people who do dry January, because I don't know, they just irritate me. I'm looking for a partner to celebrate super wet January with me, and there's a multitude of options.
Who are your options? Who are your front runners?
Liquor companies, you know, bars, restaurants.
Oh, that kind of partner. Oh, like an individual who wants to go in on it and drink a lot with you.
Yeah.
You want a liquor partner.
It's the classic all about me thing where I'm going to do dry January. I don't care what the impact is on bars and restaurants that are the lifeblood of some of our culture and economy in Milwaukee. But I'm going to do dry January because I can't control myself in December. Basically, that's the whole thing.
That is not the whole
thing. That is the whole thing.
Do you think they're doing it actively to sabotage bars and restaurants for drinking less?
They don't have the thought process to understand that that's what they're actually doing, because there is an impact. That's a measurable impact on bars and restaurants.
Yeah, there's a measurable impact on bars and restaurants in general right now, because people are drinking less, not just in January, but overall.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't endorse any of that crazy dry stuff. Anyway, so do the May the 4th folks... The hangover they got from Star Wars Day, does that carry over to the Cinco de Mayo?
I don't think May the 4th is a big drinking holiday.
Really? Shot every time you see a Star Wars reference or anything like that? Nothing?
They're just drinking blue milk, Steve.
Yeah, so I was unfamiliar with the drinking aspect of May the 4th.
Did you do anything to celebrate?
Did not.
I didn't even... You mentioned it yesterday briefly, but that was the extent of my...
We did not celebrate.
Yeah.
I didn't post anything.
No. Did you post anything at all yesterday? I didn't see anything.
No. I need to post our WBA awards. I got to get some work done today.
Yeah. Well, how come you're so lazy yesterday? Was it just because you were back to work?
No, because I got some stuff done, and then I had to go pick up some ferns off of Facebook Marketplace.
You are like, I'm a landscape guy and a garden guy. You're like all in.
I'm hyper fixated right now far as it's probably a good distraction. It's not a good distraction. It is a distraction from other stuff I actually have to get done.
I'm not going
to
tell people where you live, but if you happen to stumble by and you see Kristen outside, she is doing some groundbreaking, innovative work in the landscape area, hardscaping in some cases, pretty significant stuff.
Yeah.
So well done to you.
Thank you.
You've really embraced it.
I finally have a hobby at 39 years old.
Yeah. What took you
so
long?
Not a cheap one.
What took you so long?
I don't know.
Was it too much about you before that?
Yeah, obviously.
Now you're family focused.
Yeah, totally. All right, what are we talking about first?
I missed antagonizing you while you were gone for the 6 days. I will tell you that.
I know, I told you I missed you.
Yeah. That's very nice of you. All right. So this is like a common storyline that I'm starting a narrative about, and we've talked about it. We talked about it extensively on the show on Friday with Bill and Joe. What's going to happen in November? Midterm elections, obviously. Governor's race in Wisconsin.
Also, there's elections today in Ohio and Indiana.
Yeah. Well, the elections are an ongoing thing because all states do it at the same time.
There's a lot of primaries happening because of those state senators in Indiana not wanting to redistrict.
So you shared a story with me, I think it was the Washington Post, about this administration, their numbers, well, specifically the president, are at a historic low. Like, most unpopular president of all time. And Andrew Johnson got impeached. So, that was a long time ago. But this president, and I don't even know what the... I'm going to ask you in a second, like the MAGA folks, what do you think about these? Is it like the president said yesterday? Polling's fake. Is it really? You don't think Americans think that these things are happening to them? They're like, gas prices are $5 a gallon now, exploding all around the country. So basically the gist of the story, at least the one you share with me, is... this administration is now thinking about what post-midterms, if it's as bad as people think it might be, and their numbers are all in the red. Like, you measure different groups, young voters, Hispanic voters, black voters, women voters, college educated or not. It's like all red. All numbers are red. So what would happen if they lose? They could lose the House. What if they lost the Senate? So they lose both houses, and you got Donald Trump sitting in the White House in the Oval Office thinking, what do I do now? Well, they're actively thinking about this.
Yeah, so there's a new Washington Post exclusive that basically the lawyers from the White House, the White House lawyers, are giving private briefings to the administration's political appointees on how to best prepare for congressional oversight, as because they're basically saying that there could be, after the midterms, some subpoenas. And yeah. So it's basically, it's 30-minute briefings, and it's a PowerPoint presentation on how congressional oversight works and best practices for handling it. The people who, this is, they're anonymous because they did not have the authorization to discuss the matter publicly. But it basically is, they've encouraged political appointees to be careful about what they put in writing and provided guidance on how to respond to congressional inquiries in a timely manner. This feels like something that no matter who has control of Congress, should probably know how congressional oversight works.
You would think. It's part of your job description. Now, I had a fascinating conversation for the Squidiology podcast in a couple weeks with Jim Santel and Matt.
Oh, yeah, that was yesterday, right?
Yeah, and we spoke about this issue. The president has basically said, I thought I knew this, but they reaffirmed it for me. He basically said anyone within 200 miles of his administration is going to be pardoned on his way out. I guess that's how you can do it, but there's still going to be investigations because people are going to want to know. If you don't control anything, you could lose the presidency in 2028. You could lose both sides of Congress. There's going to be investigations, and I think maybe, this is just me saying this, based on nothing, I think the president, given he's seeing these numbers and they're having conversations like this, is starting to get, this is not good. It's not good for Meg. Just, I think that the focus on, like, today, a good news story, they're bringing the president's fitness award. That kind of, you're going to see more of that kind of stuff, less of the, for example, he doesn't want to talk about Iran anymore because it's ugly. It's messy. He doesn't have an answer. So he just says, basically it's over. We're just going to let it happen, you know, which is not an answer, which is not solving anything, including gas prices. He's basically just ignoring it and talking about the president's fitness award today when we're in a war. So focus on the positive, sunshiny stuff and ignore all the stuff that most Americans are kind of upset about, including the war in Iran, including gas prices, including everything else that you've, tariffs, consumer pricing in general. Thank God he's got the stock market. If he loses that, it's over. You imagine if the stock market, let's say it's at 49, actually just under 49 because it dropped yesterday. Let's say it goes to 39 before November. It's a bloodbath. There's no way to save it because you lose all the 401k people, all the people like me. You've already lost everybody else because the polling, I believe in polling for the most part. You lost all those folks. There's nothing left. Good news for Democrats, including the state of Wisconsin.
It is interesting, though, because there is some polling that shows that Democrats as a party still aren't popular.
Yeah.
And so it just gets us back into this pendulum swing where no one's actually fixing anything. No one, like the general electorate, doesn't like anyone. And all they can do is either not vote or vote for the opposite party and just continue to hope for something to get better.
You want to talk about that after the break? Because, I mean, you're a Dem. At least you identify
sure.
that way. Yeah, let's talk about it. Because I'm curious how you see that shaking out. Because, sure, you can have great success on your opponent's downfall, but you have to, like, capitalize on it. And if you screw it up, then what do you have? She's Chris and I'm Steve. Point taken. It is Tuesday on Point Taken. Good to be back in the saddle with my great partner, Kristen Bry, award-winning partner, Kristen Bry.
You too.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah, the station did very well, and one of the reasons you all listen is because you know that we do a great job here. And even maybe important for me is we enjoy doing it for you and with you. So I asked you before the break, and you mentioned it, you sort of teed this up. As much as Republicans are trending down towards November, and Democrats have an opportunity, they have to seize that opportunity. And I'm curious how you see, like, the consensus, like what their messaging should be, way left, moderates, you know, how does that all play out?
Well, it does feel like the winning thing for everybody is just being laser focused on how much everything costs,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Now. And I know we're going to talk about the Met Gala at the end of the show today, but guess who did not go to the Met Gala?
Musk?
I don't know. I don't even know if he was invited.
Probably not. Who didn't go? Trump?
Zoran Mamdani. He said he preferred to stay home and focus on affordability in a city where one in four residents live in poverty.
It was sort of a bad look. We'll get to
that. No, I know. We're going to get to that later. But I'm just saying, as far as I still think that's like, and we're going to talk about that later as far as young people, how they think the economy is doing. But I think that is a message. It was interesting, though, because last week when I was interviewing, or I moderated that event, you know, Kelda Royce, state senator, her first term in the assembly was 2009. So she was in office the last time Democrats, at least in Wisconsin, had a trifecta. And I asked her, you know, what would you do differently? Or what did you learn from being in the trifecta the last time? And she had an interesting thought as far as what went wrong, because that was when they didn't. They could have passed banning partisan gerrymandering, and they didn't. And she listed off a couple other things as far as part of the caucus wanting to move on this and part of the caucus not. And she made it sound like back then there was more diversity among people in each party, and so it was harder to sometimes get to consensus as move fully as a party. She, at least in Wisconsin, she thinks that there's more consensus now as far as being able to move in the same direction and get things done. But I'm hearing stuff in Virginia that with the new Spamberger, that they have a trifecta, and there's some things that they're just not moving as fast on. And is that good? Is that bad?
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that's the case? If you know.
I don't know for sure. This is some like people talking behind the scenes as far as unknown, as far as why it's so hard for some of the Democratic leadership to get in sync with Spamberger. I don't know if there's a diagnosis there. But it's like, just because you get a trifecta, just because you get the House and the Senate, doesn't mean everyone in the caucus is going to move in the same direction and move quickly. And so I think that's what people get frustrated with, is that there's all these platitudes as far as, you know, just don't, like, why the other side is dangerous, why the other side can't get anything done. But then once you actually get power, how quickly you can move to try to make an impact in people's lives quickly.
On that point, because we both know people on both sides of the aisle who do the other side is completely dangerous and we should all be afraid. I just don't have any use for that. Because the reality is we have two parties, major parties. You have to work together. Generally, that's how it works. Other than if you get the trifecta and you have the right majorities to do something with the trifecta. Again, anecdotal, based on talking to people about politics in all kinds of different formats and situations, I think most people like me, not even just to my age, younger generations, who think like I do, maybe lean right, maybe middle, maybe independence, just wants the work done and less of the squabbling and the nonsense. And the theatrical part is something that we're always attracted to. It's why social media is popular. Mm-hmm. The negative, there's actually really, there's science behind why as a species, did you know the science? Because in evolution, the bad stuff kept you, if you were afraid of the bad stuff, it kept you alive. So anything negative was perceived as something that you were always paying hyper attention to. That's why negative thrives on social media. That's the evolutionary piece of that stuff. You can tell I've been reading a lot.
That's why we like bad news?
Yeah. Isn't that wild? Because we have to pay attention closer to bad news, because you could end your life. If you're a early human and you're running across a field, you got to be really aware of where the lions are.
Apparently, that's also why ADHD was, because you could be easily distracted, so you could be looking out for danger.
Yeah. So there's so much to this. To me, again, maybe this is not politically naive, maybe it's just wishful thinking, maybe it's just hopefulness. I think there's opportunity for people who play in the middle. Because right now, independents, they're like, they don't like Trump, they don't like MAGA, I'm not sure they know what the Democrats are doing. That's the group that decides elections.
But how does the middle, I don't disagree with you as far as when you talk to people one-on-one and an eagerness for that. How does the middle break through? How does that message break through when we talk about an attention economy? As you just said, there's more sensationalism, doomerism, whatever you want to call it.
I'm going to give you a surprising answer after the break.
That breaks through the noise and the blame game. But as far as like the pragmatic, calming, bipartisan, whatever you want to call it, like someone who's actually trying to do reform and move us towards stabilization, I don't know if that's a message that people get like inspired by.
I think my answer is going to surprise you.
Okay.
After the break, point taken, Chris and Steve. Before the break, she said, what's it going to take to sort of bring that message to the folks, independents and others who are looking for, I think, a common sense, logic-filled leader? and this is like ironic that I'm saying this, it's going to take almost a cult of celebrity, somebody that's so, almost the Obama example.
But Obama wasn't a celebrity before he ran.
No, but he was. He became a presidential celebrity. I met him a bunch of times. The dude was like, he was a movie star president. Let's be honest.
By the time he left, yes.
But I think it's going to require somebody that's just captures, because you know this, we're a celebrity worship culture now.
We're going to talk about it later.
So why would we not expect our political leaders to fall into that category?
So do you have someone in mind?
No. But if you have that, and it's not Gavin Newsom, because a lot of people are pointing in that direction. No. He's sort of playing that.
So are you meaning someone who is currently a celebrity and not a politician, or someone who's just super well-known?
Donald Trump example.
Mark Cuban?
Perhaps. He's sort of expressed some interest. I think it's going to take that great intellect that's not
The Rock?
He's talked about it, too. I mean, you laugh, but
Mark Cuban's a much more viable option, I think,
Mark Cuban is
than The Rock. I don't know who's smarter, but I'm just saying Mark Cuban's doing some interesting things when it comes to, like, pharmaceuticals, and I think thinks about, he's inserted himself into the conversation around some policy issues more than I've ever seen The Rock do anything with
And
that.
A lot of people would say, how about some of these tech bros?
No.
I mistakenly called some of them idiot savants. It's actually savant idiots. They're actually really smart, but when they're in public and they're commenting on things that are outside their area of expertise, they're actually just, what's the word I can safely use without people criticizing me? Just stupid. I mean, Musk is a classic example. It's like, what are you saying? What are you doing? And there's Sam Altman. I mean, the list is long of these dudes. And so it's mainly dudes, right?
It is mainly dudes.
So if you got one of those, like Mark Cuban, I'm not saying I'm endorsing
the most famous of the women. Is she still in prison? Is Elizabeth Holmes out of prison yet?
No. Theranos, the company?
Theranos.
Theranos, yeah. She's still in prison, but she wants to get out.
Of course.
Surprise, surprise. She's smart, but she also made horrible mistakes.
Of the major
she lied.
Tech guys, I'm not sure any of the women are the first ones you think of.
It's funny that I was thinking about that as you were mentioning that.
Sheryl Sandberg?
Melinda Gates, right?
Yeah.
She's given away most of her fortune, but here's the ironic thing.
Because
her nut is still big, she's actually worth more than
so is Mackenzie when she Scott. Started.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
This is why we talk about when we say tax billionaires. Literally, Mackenzie Scott has, I have to go to break.
All right.
She's given away so much more money and she's still worth more than she was when they got divorced.
All right. To be continued.
Let me take a selfie.
Do you remember when this song came out?
Or no.
Did this miss you?
I miss you.
This is like circa 2014, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, this was a jam.
I was busy being mayoral at that time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, so we talk about a fair amount. As of July, in all across Wisconsin, there will be a cell phone ban. But are they working? Well, there is a new study from the National Bureau of Economic Research that lands on a very unsatisfying answer. Yes and no. So the research looked at 40,000 schools from 2019 to 2026 with varying levels of restrictions. So stricter bans like locking phones in the little pouches reduced phone use by about 30%, which is not surprising. But also, students pushed back, well-being dipped, and suspensions rose. But the big thing, test scores barely budged. On average, the impact was close to zero, despite earlier smaller studies that suggested otherwise. And so it's interesting because cell phones are a problem. I think this is what I take away from this. Cell phones are a problem when it comes to being distracted, when it comes to engaging with your classmates and not just like immediately going to your phone. But it also seems like there is other things at play when it comes to absences, education.
Of course.
That the cell phone ban doesn't necessarily solve for.
It was never going to be the panacea or the fixer of all things. It's hey, if I see, 30% less usage? Good. Because it's not disputable that excessive screen time by young adolescent brains is bad for them.
It's bad for all of us, honestly.
Adults, too. And I always caution you on that.
I know.
I scold you as you're non-dad to not do that.
And I can't hold my phone while I'm gardening.
You cannot get outside, smell, touch the grass, smell the fresh air, enjoy the fresh air. Just on this, a couple things. Teachers are happier. I don't know where everyone works, But if you're happier at work, is it arguable that you're going to be better at your job? So that's sort of a plus. I'll take that any day of the week. It's a plus for me that kids are not on their phones as much. I think this is a work in progress. It's a piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
When we talked to Clustin Morgan, or I talked to Dr. Howard Fuller last week for another edition of my podcast, there's a lot of things that go into the secret sauce of making kids learn. This is just one: reading, fundamentals, focusing back on fundamentals, making kids safe in schools. You think kids are excited about going to school? They could be killed in a mass shooting. Anybody pay attention to that story? Or are we just going to pretend it's not a problem, which is what America's done for, I don't know, 40 years? Maybe that's part of the problem. So nothing is going to solve everything. And we are such a instant gratification society. There's going to be pushback. I noticed in the study that kids are more irritable in the period after they get their phones removed because it's disruptive. They're used to doing that. When they're not in school, they're on their phones constantly. I can't tell you how many kids I see anywhere. Out in the Third Street Market Hall, wherever I go, kids are on their phones.
Well, we're all on our phones, right? There was,
I guess.
But I mean, that was what was interesting being in the nostalgia of being in my high school last week, right? Of walking into Madison West and noticing the changes structurally that they've made, but also the memory of what we did all day without having our phone to distract us and like looking at it and walking down, like you actually had to look up when you walked in down the halls because you had nothing to look at, right? Yeah. You were actually just like seeing, like scoping people out and seeing who was scoping you out. And it was a very different experience than what kids have now. But it was also interesting because when I asked this question to the social studies government teacher that I talked to at Middleton last week, because they've had a phone ban. So they've had a phone ban that predates what's going to happen in July. But he was like, you know, ultimately, there's also when there's a will, there's a way. Because if you have a MacBook, which some of these kids don't use the laptop that they're given, they have their own personal MacBook, and you have iMessage on there, so you can text on there. If you have an Apple Watch, there's all these other devices that's different than just your phone that kids can find and get away. And like as soon as they're out of school, they're back on their phone. So it's not foolproof as far as bullying, as far as some of the impacts that social media is having on their brains. But at least in school, like this isn't me arguing that like, oh, well, it's not working, so get rid of it. I think there are some, like, depending on what you're solving for, there's reasons to keep it in place.
I'll take it just for the screen time drop. Yeah. That's the big one for me. Here's my question, our question. It's going to happen in Wisconsin. July 1st, I think, is the start. Do you want your kids, are you upset that it's going to go away? Do you want your kids to have access to their phones in the classroom during educational time? If that's your demand or your want, make the argument in a text why you think that's, why you need that. And you don't have to tell me emergencies, because that's the one that people are going to, I get it, but we've always had emergencies. Now they've spiked up in the last 40 years for the thing, like just the very thing I said earlier. But how do you think calling your kid in school is going to change that situation? Are you giving them like first responder advice to, because they've already been trained in that. Every damn school now has, unfortunately, mass shooting training. I guess fortunately or unfortunately. So that your parental wisdom is probably not going to do much other than get to a safe place. Thanks for calling. Or you can maybe.
Well, I think not to be morbid, but I'm pretty sure it's to say goodbye.
Really? I mean, come on.
Do you not think that's what, have you ever never?
You think parents are calling, if they, so they hear them at, they're calling their kids to say goodbye.
I think the kids are, there's.
Why would you assume they're dead, first off?
Well, no, but as far as every time that there is a text that goes viral of a child who was in some kind of mass shooting, they're texting their parents like, I love you. Or they're like keeping them up to date. So I don't think it's about like the parents necessarily knowing that they're going to have the right advice.
What happened
when
mass shootings before there was cell phones?
There was a lot less of them.
Yeah, I suppose. If that's your motivation, tell me.
No, I'm just saying that I don't think it's about parents. I don't think parents' motivation is because they're going to have the right thing to say. It's just in that moment, they want to be able to get a hold of their kid because of course they do.
So then you'll never get rid of cell phones.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying that it's not your, I'm debunking your argument of why parents want their kids to have a cell phone just so they can give them advice.
I want parents to tell me what their argument is.
Okay.
855-616-1620. If that's it, tell me because I'm more than happy to hear it. I think at some point, what was the story I didn't get to last week? There's a country, they're just going to not allow kids to have smartphone to like 16 at all. No access. I think it's Greece. They're debating it.
Really? Greece?
At, I'm just, I'll check it during the break. Okay. At all. Zero access. Not going to get it. You're not going to be able to legally carry a phone.
How did that enforce that?
I have no idea. Maybe that's why they have an enactment.
Carding 18-year-olds who look young?
Who knows? Because we know that kids are already cheating in the states that already banned these things, already cheating around the system by just putting them. In one case, they have a photo ID, and you put a fake mustache on, and you pass the photo ID, you get the access. That's the kind of stuff. Kids are, they're not stupid.
They're not stupid. I will say that.
Even though test scores are not improving, they're not stupid. Trust me. Quick break. During the break, I was looking up just some polling evidence about how parents view cell phones and the crackdown and stuff. And not anywhere near to us, but Massachusetts, two-thirds of parents support the bell-to-bell, so start to end of your school day, crackdown on cell phones in public schools. I think at some point, given what we've seen on the impact of screen time, mental health, that's a whole nother conversation, the impact on that exposure to bullying online and even in their kids' bedrooms because they take their phones to bed with them now in some cases. It's destructive. And there's even now evidence, real science, that says it's impacting their brains, in especially younger kids under 10, under 12, as they try to develop those brains to be functioning adults, that excessive screen time can really cause havoc. I think it's inevitable that we're going to have these crackdowns and they're going to go away in some form or format. Now, whether the Greece example is going to play out.
Did you find out if it was Greece or not?
It is Greece, but okay. I didn't have a chance to look at the story. It's a pretty bold idea.
Yeah.
I mean, you're basically saying no.
I just don't know how you enforcement is always.
How do you force anything? You have to have rules and you have to have some form or fashion to enforce. Ultimately, they have to figure that out. It does seem extreme, which is probably why Greece is struggling with it, at least the debate about it. I don't know if there's any other example, unless the texters have an example of that a country has done that. We have like a mismatch in this country. Because some schools, as you said, they've already had this. Not a school situation, but Kathy went to, I think it was a Journey concert in Vegas. They take your phone away from you and put it in a pouch.
Well, there's a lot of, like, different comedy shows do that, different concerts do that.
Yeah, I know it's a protection for them.
There is a trend now of phone-free places.
Yeah.
Of, like, bars and restaurants and parties where you have to either put it in a jar. You know what? I heard a good one yesterday. Well, maybe it wasn't yesterday. It was over the weekend. But a group of guys in Milwaukee that go out to dinner. And the first person who grabs their phone, they all put their phones on the table, and the first person who grabs for their phone has to buy dinner. And the first night they did it was at Carnivore.
Oh, wow. Yikes.
And so I was like, ooh, I like that rule. I mean, maybe not all of dinner, but like as far as the acknowledgement across the board that I think we're having as far as our phone addiction, no matter what age you are. And I told you, did I show you this yesterday? So fascinating. At Middleton High School, every week in their library, they put a poll question up, similar to what your poll questions were. And it's a this or that. It's just two options. And forgot what last week's was that they were still voting on. And so you come in, you put a little chip in which bucket you vote for. But the weeks prior, where they had also posted what the results were, was would you rather live without heat and AC or live without internet?
That's a good question.
And remember, these are teenagers, yeah, current high school students that are voting.
They said internet.
That they would rather live without
Yeah, they would rather live without heating and AC. That they want their internet.
75% said they would rather live without internet.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm telling you that there is, it was so surprising. And I'm telling you that there is more of a understanding that this screens and technology is not necessarily good for us. It is hard to break that habit because we become so reliant on them. But I think that more than you think, people are like, I need a break.
Kathy and I were eating at a restaurant, Wolfgang Puck's at MGM Grand in Vegas when we were just there. It's not a fancy restaurant. It's a very affordable Wolfgang Puck's restaurant. Trust me. I look over at the table. There's eight adults. I think it was a realtor's. Every one of them was on their phone. And I nudged Kathy, go, she says, get over it. Is it wrong for me to be disgusted by that? You're out to dinner. How is that communicating? Or how is that even fun? You're all on your own phones. Am I too judgmental?
A little bit. I mean, right. More things than just that. All right, we got to take a quick break. We'll be back in a minute. Oof.
Couple days left. Salute to Service, the nomination period. Then we get into the fun. So next week, we're going to play all of our honorees from last year, each one each day. And then Heroes Week is the following week, where we tell the story of first responders. But I need your help. Text the word salute, S-A-L-U-T-E, to 855-616-1620. I've been going through some of them, starting to make some phone calls. Just I need more information in some cases. Just tell me the story in your words why you're nominating someone. Police, fire, dispatch, EMT, medical health professionals, nurses, doctors. There's a lot of different pieces to the puzzle, and I've done a lot of mental health experts. I just had a great one submitted a couple days ago. But I need more nominations. I want to make sure we have the best honors week that we've ever had. Thanks to Waterstone Bank for making it all possible. But I got to get those nominations in by Friday so I can sort through all this stuff, because we, Jazz and I, put these pieces together. It's going to be a very busy next week as we sort of sort through the stuff, get all our presentations ready for presentation honors week, where they come in studio, last half hour of the show, Kristen and I, the honorees, sometimes their family, we take pictures. Just, it's amazing.
It's very fun. I had a great time last year.
Yeah, and their stories are so awesome. So text the word salutes, 855-616-1620, or if you're on WTMJ.com, our great website. I think we won best website at WBAs as well. Yeah. You can find the banner right on top. Waterstone Bank, Steve's Convenience Salute to Service. Just click on it. Takes you right to the form. Answer a few questions. I may call you to get more information. So that's the process. Get those in by Friday, and we'll do the rest. All right. Come up the next hour. Young people. We've talked about such a critical piece of the future of this country, obviously, because they're going to be the future leaders and everything else that they're not doing already. Smarts. We can have that conversation, but they are struggling, and that's the point of the conversation. They're telling us there's a problem. Will we listen to them when they say that? Because new polling suggests it's pretty bad. We'll sort through that mess after the news, which is next.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bryan.
Welcome back to the 11 o'clock hour of Point Taken. And young people, so what do you consider young, Steve, at your age?
Under 30.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Under 30. What do you consider me?
I don't know, not
Am I
young.
Am I middle-aged?
Well, technically, I think you're what is it? You're 39, right?
39.
Yeah, 35 is like the start of that, right?
Is it?
35 to like 55?
So yeah. 40 is not the new 30?
34 to 50, yeah.
No. Anyways, all right.
No, I would say you're very youthful in how you approach things, so you probably are not actually participating in the middle age environment yet.
It's fine. I'm
that's as nicely as I can say it without smoking.
All right, so there was a survey recently that asked 18 to 24-year-olds, so this is younger than under 30, how they viewed the economy. And 8 out of 10 said it was either bad or terrible. Not very good. So in the 25 to 29 range, 52% said the economy was bad. About 3 in 10 said it was terrible. And a combined percentage of 81% viewed the economy negatively. Only a mere 2% in the 18 to 24 range and 1% in the 25 to 29 range said that they view the economy was excellent.
So you've heard me say this probably, and other people like me, white, older men, get a job. But now the problem is it's a tough job market.
For entry level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So unless you have a better solution, we need to figure this out for young men and young women. They need to get jobs and at some point support families if they choose to go that route. And right now, it's not working out. The part that really scared me, 2% in the 18 to 24 and 1% in the 25 to 29 rated excellent. That's like non-existent in this sample of people. And, you know, we talked a lot about how young people are, they could be election deciders because, as we saw, young men, white men, went for Trump big time in the last election. That's a part of this as well.
But that's what was really interesting. So I talked to... Stop me if I told you this already, but maybe people listening didn't hear me say it, so we'll say it again. When I was in Madison a couple weeks ago for you were in Vegas, and I was there for a panel on Gen Z, their political leanings, and it was pollsters and researchers. And John Della Volpe, who's from Harvard and has been doing the Harvard Youth Study or Youth Poll since 2000, so he's seen my generation and the generation under me, and their political leanings, sways, trends. And he's done thousands of focus groups, and he's talked to thousands of Gen Z. And one, he definitely reflected this, that in almost every single focus group he does, there's someone in there who's either been homeless or someone very close to them has been homeless, which is shocking to me. But as far as their lived experience being economic strife, he said this comes up in every single focus group. And second, in that sentiment, as far as like our young men moving to the right, he says in his conversation that he's had with people, it's less about their ideology moving to the right and that they just saw what they felt under Biden and they just wanted to change. And so it was more that they took a chance on what Trump could do versus their ideology around, you know, gun control, climate change, women's right to choose, all these other things. They were just desperate for a change in their lived experience as far as it comes to like financial stability, that they were willing to make that vote. And it's not like an adherence to right-wing politics.
And here's the political reality of that. New jobs, job creation under this administration, dismal.
Yeah.
Way lower than the previous administration that those voters were ticked off about. So you have that going on. You have an economy that's pricing them out of being able to be, you know, on their own or moving out for their first time. They can't afford it. So and this is something that I've talked about before in more of my old show, when they decided to make kids eligible for their parents' insurance if they lived at home until 26, another factor that sort of prevented them from the term that people use is spreading their wings. It just allowed them to stay home longer, which I don't think was a positive. We can have a whole medical conversation about that and healthcare conversation. So there's factors working against, but if we don't figure this out, there's always a core number of jobs and a core number of industries that need workers. And our population is declining. So if we have that on top of my group aging out and young people not finding jobs, who's doing the damn work? You want to really have a recession / even worse? Don't figure this problem out. And after the break, we should talk about some ideas that maybe might work here.
Do you have ideas?
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of.
Well, do you want to talk about the structural decline of just like
the labor force? Yeah, let's do that first, then I'll give you some ideas.
Okay.
Some hope.
Oh.
If someone listens, and it's debatable whether anyone listens to me or not. She's Kristen, I'm Steve. Point taken, 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen Bry. He is Steve Scafidi. And I think my brother sent this to me this morning. Similar to what we were just talking about as far as young people, like 81% of young people in the recent survey saying that negative feelings about the economy. But it's a little complex. So it's for data for the people, and it's looking at the difference between unemployment tells us who's looking for work but can't find it.
Yes, actively looking for work.
But that is a different denominator
than
labor force. So labor force tells you how many people are even in the game looking. So they right off the bat, they give an example. I think it's a county in Alabama that has the same unemployment rate as the county that Las Vegas is in.
Clark County.
So it's these two with unemployment rate, both like 5-ish%, which is above the national average, but two very different cities as far as job prospects go, are two very different counties. And so if you're only looking at the unemployment rate to talk about the economy, you're missing a big piece of the puzzle, because this new data, so data for the people, they looked at a county level labor force trends over the last 20 years. So in 2010, 8% of counties in the whole country were in what they're calling structural labor force decline. By 2025, that number was 32%. And so if you think about it as a fact that like more supporters, if you have more people just leaving the labor force in total, You have less people supporting businesses, less people supporting school enrollment, less local tax revenue, less police and fire budgets. So all of these downstream impacts of people getting older, people moving out of these towns, and you just see, can we put the, Jazz, can we put that up? So if you're watching the YouTube right now,
yeah, it's up
they on have it. A visual of what counties, and you can see where the red is. So text WATCH to 855-616.
Like the middle of the country's red.
But I mean, also, so like the hyper green, there's plots in 2010, you can see Florida, Arizona, Colorado, parts of Texas, California, Oregon, Seattle, areas that are hyper green and what they're calling hyper growth. And then you fast forward 20 years ish, I guess it's more like 15 years. How much red? I mean, I don't really see even a single area. We talk about how much Dane County grows in Wisconsin, and on that map, it doesn't even count as a hyper growth.
So what does that suggest to you?
I mean, what it suggests to me is a similar trend as far as what we talk about wealth being concentrated at the top and it not actually trickling down, because there are people. And so it's like the cycle of people. I just had this conversation with a guy who runs the Northwoods Policy Institute or something, Northwoods Policy something, of different towns. And I always think of Wisconsin Rapids because of my tie to Wisconsin Rapids, but I think there's probably much more dire examples than that of they're just crumbling because
they're in a world of
people there.
The population is declining.
And how do you ever get people to move back to those areas? Or is the expectation that everyone's going to, in order to survive, you're going to have to attract and move closer to urban centers?
One of the answers is innovation, doing something differently than we've done in the past. Part of the reason you mentioned wealth inequity, it's also for generations we've sent kids off to 4-year in universities getting degrees that they can't even get jobs in or got paid nothing to do those jobs. That's probably not sustainable, and I think it's leading to some of the problems we're seeing here. After the break, I'm going to talk about some of the ideas that I have. They're not my ideas. I did a little bit of reading on it. There are ways you can approach this, but Texter nailed it. If you're not thinking about what AI, not only what AI can do, but what AI can't do, that's an opportunity, because AI can't do everything. AI is not going to come to your house and fix your heating and AC. AI is not going to fix your plumbing. It's not going to fix a lot of things. It can do things on the administrative end and certainly on the all the things that make up a company, payroll, all those things, management, but it can't do those jobs. So that's sort of the answer. But this is, I think, a legacy of we're not thinking. We're a very now culture. We don't think ahead. And this map change in, what is it, 20 years?
This is 2010 to 2025, so
yeah,
15.
15 years. That's stunning. I mean, you see that red there?
But it also shows, this is what we're talking about with the Met Gala, is just like the Hunger Games of it all.
Yeah.
And that there is just areas.
I got it, you don't.
Yeah. And that there is areas and there are groups of people who have more money that they know what to do with. And then there's so many areas that like are just crumbling.
I've had so many debates about Elon Musk over the last 2 years with friends of mine. I'm not arguing he's not smart, but culturally, he's illiterate. He doesn't understand what he's doing. He is going to be the first trillionaire on the planet. You can't even spend $1 billion, basically, unless you're buying a country or, you know, what I'm talking about. The people that have that kind of wealth, you could never possibly spend $1 trillion. And we're going to have Elon Musk, who, again, I think is culturally illiterate and probably has some other things that are scary, maybe a drug addict, ketamine addict. You want him to be leading the way on this stuff? I don't. So we can worship AI and all these, again, tech bros, and it's mainly men. They're going to lead us to the happy future? I don't think so. So that's the warning sign. Stuff like this should scare the hell out of everybody. And if you have a child who's in that age group, 18 to 24, 24 to 29, I read the text. Not sure their kid's ever going to get a good paying job.
Paying job, overown a house, ever want to have kids.
Yeah.
Feel like they can't afford them.
So that's a burden that not only the child, their young adult has, but the parents also have that burden. It doesn't make for a healthy mental health situation in our country either, because we're all stressed all the time. And you throw a recession or worse. I hate to be the spreader of doom and gloom because that's typically not me, but man, that is scary stuff. Some ideas for potentially figuring these things out after the break. All right, so we have the situation. The labor force is just mismatched across the country. We are losing people that are they're basically giving up. They're not even in the job bank. They're not going to actively seeking work. They're just there. In many cases, they're living not a great life. We talked about the polling numbers that say young people have a very pessimistic view of where this economy is going, and I don't doubt their belief in that. So the old standard was go to the trades. So I talked to some people that push trades and work in the trades. They're like, a lot of people say that. We have a high standard, and there's
a
lot of
work.
Well,
that's the thing. It's hard to get into a union sometimes, right? It's not like you're just like anyone can do it.
Yes.
And sometimes there's not enough room because, right, they don't necessarily want an oversaturation to then, like, lower their own wages.
It's often a one of, two of, and that's the most people we can handle. So that's not – now, if you're interested in that, knock yourself out. There are jobs available. And the big one that – I used to be in PR, and I used to work for a company that did a lot of welding work. That's still a very lucrative job. If that's your thing and you want to work in that sort of industry, well paid, great benefits, knock yourself out. I think you have to start thinking to the point I made before. AI is going to do a lot of amazing things. I'm not an anti-AI guy. I'm sometimes concerned how people use it, and I have fears about sort of what it does on the internet and when we can't tell what's real and what's not real. But you should be definitely thinking about how AI changes the workforce and job availability. What AI can't do is immediately where you should be looking at yourself. The other thing is often, at least going back to my high school experience, when you were a junior, you started talking to your guidance counselors. That process has to start earlier. I know parents want their kids to be everything. They want them to learn everything. They want to know everything. But if your kid has an inclination one way or the other earlier, middle school, let's start them on the path to having a functional idea, working idea of what they want to do in life. Doesn't mean they have to commit to it, but understand it doesn't have to be go get a liberal arts degree at wherever. Maybe that's not the best plan. Some people that'll work for them.
Which is hilarious. But what degree do you think is going to be useful in the future?
For a 4-year school?
Yeah.
Communication. You're still going to need communicators. Communication is the key to everything.
So what do you see as liberal arts compared to communication?
I don't want to offend anybody because there's a lot of people that get those degrees. I don't think it applies to the real world when it comes to jobs, and you don't make a lot of money doing those jobs. You define it for me. I'll tell you.
Well, no, because I just think that there is, if anything, the humanities, thus
I'm not saying they're not important. Trust
is
me.
What's going to continue to differentiate us from AI. And so there's a whole generation of kids who were told, go get a computer science degree, and now entry-level computer science, like the jobs that would have been applied for is like, well, we don't need junior coders anymore because AI can just do that.
No.
And so the critical thinking, the actual like understanding of how things work is actually like what humanities can teach you.
Yeah. I'm not anti-humanities. It's very critically important.
More useful that AI is going to be harder to replace.
But you got to match that desire, that education to a real job that's going to pay you money. That's
but what are the real jobs going to be?
Again, a mass comm degree, you can actually make money in mass comm. Any communication job, you can work in companies, you can do PR. There's a lot of things you can do that actually are well-paying jobs if you're smart enough to be effectively.
So you don't think AI is coming for PR jobs?
I don't think so, because AI is interesting. Well, we don't have enough time, but AI is an interesting idea. It's still not there yet. That would be my talk on AI. Okay. Into the gala, we must go. We're ready now. We're all aglow. Into the gala, let's go in. I heard gala in the song. I don't know if that's related. This is a Broadway song, right?
Is this a Broadway song, guys?
No, it's from My Little Pony.
My Little Pony, wow. I vaguely remember that from my kids' younger days.
Well, I knew that... What are your thoughts? What are your initial thoughts on the Met Gala?
I could care less.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm
doing it because you want to talk about it. Because you actually have a good point to make about it, which I do care about.
Well, and I've never been... I like the Oscars. I will say I like the Oscars because of the movie aspect, and I do think that there is something to be said as far as celebrating, especially the people who are not the main actors, but the set designers, the makeup artists, and the people who really make a movie, because you always think of the movie just as the stars, but it's such a team art. And I know the Met Gala is a fundraiser. It's a fundraiser for fine art. But every year, I feel like this topic comes up. And every year, it is like the Hunger Games dystopia, as we talk about just like the haves and the have-nots. Because I think every ticket is like $100,000. Mm-hmm. The outfits are just walking art. But yet, we've been sitting here all morning, and all of the morning shows have covered it, right? And it is on my social feed starting last night. There's lots of the dresses and who wore what. And but also there's a lot of discourse over the fact that there is this massive divide of like the K economy and the haves and have nots. But on top of this, it already was an opulent event. Mm-hmm. But this year, Jeff Bezos and Lauren Santos Bezos served as the lead sponsors and honorary chairs. So it drew even more ire than usual of people boycotting, protesting the event. And I didn't realize this. There's an activist group called Everyone Hates Elon.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I did not know.
Until, maybe I should join that group.
Reading about this.
Although I don't hate him. I just don't
and
like him.
They called for a boycott. They also placed about 300 bottles of fake urine.
Yeah. Well, inside what's the significance of that?
The
exactly?
Metropolitan Museum of Art, because it was a nod to the conditions for Amazon warehouse workers who have to pee in bottles because they don't have a bathroom break.
Okay.
But the critics are questioning, like, basically with this funder, or these being the Bezos being the lead sponsors for us, when they've also done mass layoffs at the Washington Post, growing perception that he and his fellow billionaires are not paying their fair share of taxes, and a donation to Trump's inauguration fund that was $50 million. Oh, and they also, the Melania Trump documentary. And so, I just, is this an escape for people? Like, what is the continued draw to this? Because there is always this backlash, and it brings out these really, like, a juxtaposition of mixed feelings of, it's celebrating high art and it is going towards a good cause. But it is also just this like opulent wealth on display.
Look, money for the fine arts. Absolutely. This stuff, it's so silly because I'm just looking at, I saw this on one of the monitors. So I looked it up. Actress Sarah Paulson. She's done a lot of stuff. She's a
great actress.
She has a dollar bill, like glasses on. And it's a protest against wealth. But you're going to a gala that is all about wealth. I don't get the...
Well, this was the AOC criticism from a couple years back.
Yeah,
she
same
wore that
thing.
Dress and says, was it eat the rich or tax the rich?
I don't know.
But it was like, well, you're there. I mean, her ticket was donated and the dress was donated and all these different things. But it is just this weird thing that we're attached to. And I don't know if this is the same as like how the Brits have the royals, where there is this culture of being able to judge and aspire to and have this like class of people that is a distraction from our daily lives. But it is just weird because you have people who like can't even afford gas and groceries right now. And then this is like the main story on all of the morning shows this morning.
We're a celebrity culture. They love celebrities. And, you know, whether it's the dumb Kelly Ripa show, that's all they do is present these people, even when it's not this time of year. Most celebrities, when you meet them, are just real people. They're normal people. Not all of them, but most are just like, but this stuff, it seems to be like this cult of celebrity, which I don't like, where someone has to carry you up the stairs because your outfit is too cumbersome.
The Washington Post did a whole investigation on how do people pee in those dresses. And it sounds like their initial reaction was they didn't want to talk about it. Like a lot of the designers and stuff like wouldn't answer their calls as far as talking about how any of these women actually go to the bathroom. And I guess one of the answers they got is like they just don't drink anything all night, so they don't have to go.
You know, the phrase that I use is read the room. Well, read the country.
Well, and some people did, right? Like I said, Zoran Mamdani did not go, which doesn't surprise me. Zendaya, who usually is there, did not go. Bella Hadid opted out. And so there was, but then there's obviously like a lot of people who you would expect. Beyonce was there. Rihanna was there. I guess Mark Zuckerberg went, but didn't walk the red carpet. Heidi Klum was there.
She went as a statue.
She went as a statue. Yeah.
Well, she's almost old enough to be a statue now, so whatever.
She still looks amazing.
Shout out Heidi Klum. I have no use for it. I didn't watch any of it. I seen it on pop up on the monitors. I like the idea that we should talk about it because it's culturally relevant. Because in the midst of all things we talked about on this show today, they don't seem to be bothered by them. And I'll say this: the richest people in the world are rapidly approaching the title of the most hated people in the world. I guess you could say that about the Rockefellers and some of those names from our country's past. Were they hated like this? I don't know. I guess we'll have to do some more research.
I feel like there was more. Look about how many buildings and stuff we have named after them, because there was more of a undercurrent of actual philanthropy and stuff that was built. And not like none of these people give enough away to move the needle. And if they do, it's in their own interest. And
it just seems superficial and fake to me.
It just feels like history repeating itself.
Yeah.
Like, we can't, this can't last forever as far as the direction that we're headed in.
No, something has to change. And, you know, we've had resets in our country's history a lot. So this, as my guests on my podcast always remind me, we've done this before. It's just, it's a different version of the same thing. We just, it's cyclical. And maybe we're, you know, in the era of a celebrity presidents and a culture that worships celebrities. Maybe this is sort of the area and then we kind of get off that for a while. I'm sick of these idiots, and they just go back to like regular politicians who actually do the job and don't focus on getting on TV and radio a lot. Maybe that's how it's fixed. I don't know. Maybe that's optimistic. Don't know.
All right.
But it matters. You should care about it. That's the only context I would have talked about the Met, because you had a good points to make.
Yeah, I don't really care about it. I'm not going to.
Would you go if they invited you? You'd probably go.
Ooh.
You'd probably go.
See, that's a hard question. Because as me, like, I would never get invited. I also don't care enough about fashion to ever.
But they come to you. You're not designing it. Someone says, hey, would you wear this?
No, I know. But I think, like, a lot of the people who get invites are also people who, like, clearly care about fashion. But it's like, would you go just for the experience of what the hell it's like?
Yeah, no.
No, you would no. you not?
And I just as a little kicker, because I guess apparently I'm into attacking people. This worship of is it Anna Wintour?
Yeah.
She treats people like crap, and we're gonna worship this woman?
Okay.
I mean, stop. What is that about?
She's odd too?
No, of course not. She's odd looking, she acts like a weirdo. No thanks. That's a walking definition of the problem we're talking about. Just weirdness. We celebrate weirdness apparently now. That's on a scale of 1 to 10, she's minus 100 in my book.
Okay.
That's how much I don't like her.
How much do you actually know about her?
I saw the first movie. I know who she is. Vogue. I know what she does. See, I'm aware.
You saw a fictional movie where...
I know her storyline.
Meryl Streep played a character.
Pretty close.
And now you're projecting...
Pretty close.
All right.
Are you arguing she's a nice person?
I am arguing that I think you are making some major leaps.
You are out on a limb saying she's a nice person. But go with it if you want to.
I didn't say that!
You're sort of arguing she's a nice person.
No, I am arguing that you are making some major leaps in your assumptions
about
her.
You know what I'm doing
here?
I'm just trying to get you riled up.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, quick break.
Hey, the Kentucky Derby was this weekend.
Did you watch?
I did watch just a race. I didn't watch all the lead.
What
a race.
It's
like hours of,
way from behind.
And we'll mention it after. I have a short clip. It's part of a longer thing that CBS did on a really fun story. And then I definitely want to highlight the winner and the trainer, because that's a groundbreaking story. So here's a little bit of that piece.
Saturday, Bob Y had attended 79 Kentucky Derbies in a row. His first, he says, was in 1947.
To the sport of kings, 47 brought one of the greatest of all Kentucky Derbies.
This would be his 80th.
Okay, Mr. Bob, here we go.
When we got to Churchill Downs, the troopers escorted him in as a VIP. Bob was wheeled to a seat directly in front of the leaderboard with an unobstructed view of the finish line.
So just a short little clip. I encourage you to check it out. And if you send me a text, I'll send you the link. They set him up perfectly. He's dying is basically the story. But it's unprecedented to go to. Like, they were talking to people that work at Churchill Downs. They have, like, 30 years in a row. 80 years in a row. It's unprecedented. And they set him up so nicely. And I always love stories about people doing nice things for nice people. But the real story of the race is, from this weekend, is a woman, for the first time, is the trainer of this. And it came from last to first. Funny tie-in, though, because Bob picked her horse.
He did?
In a trifecta, his grandson won $60,000. Isn't that wild?
Oh, wow.
That was the kick. We were going to play the whole thing, but we didn't have enough time. So he bet the horse, her horse, which won, first time a woman trainer has ever won the Kentucky Derby.
And the video of her watching the win is really such a great story. Incredible. Yeah. But also, wasn't the jockey who won, wasn't his brother also racing?
I think so, yeah.
And so it was his first win.
Yeah.
It is interesting because I have such mixed feelings about horse racing. Because I know that there's like a heritage there, and I know that and there's a lot of history, but it's also, I don't know, it also makes me feel kind of uncomfortable.
I like horse racing. I used to go to...
Have you been to the Kentucky Derby?
No, I've never been, but I used to go to Arlington in Chicago, which is now torn down for maybe a Bears stadium, maybe not.
Maybe Indiana.
We took the whole family down, grandkids, and we had so much fun watching the horse races, and I'll miss that. And I used to bet the horse races in Vegas for years. Went to Caesar's Palace, sat in their sports book, and bet the races in the afternoon because it's a quiet part of the day. I miss that, too. But what a great story. People doing nice things for nice people.
My parents went when they were in their 20s, and they drove down with, like, barely any money, and they came back with, like, 4 cents as far as trying to drive down to Kentucky. And then, but my mom reminded, she was down here this weekend. She reminded me, they went when they still had people on the inner circle.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'll never forget. She was on my dad's shoulders, which reminder, my dad's 6'8". So she had a very good view.
She's seen everything.
She goes, when the horses ran, the entire earth just shakes.
Oh, yeah.
And she goes, they don't even let people down there anymore. But she's like, I'll never forget that feeling.
It's whatever your thoughts on horse racing. It's just an incredible event culturally. And, you know, it's just amazing. It's an amazing storylines over the year. But
do you care about the outfits at Kentucky Derby?
Not really. No. Just like the race. All right. After the break, we got to talk newsletter.
Newsletter.
After the break. All right. A couple quick mentions here. Our newsletter is fantastic. Even though I'm biased, I say that people that read it, they love it. It's we've got a new platform. It's easy to read. It's fun to read. It looks amazing. The graphics are cool.
I also promise that I put a picture of my hardscaping in this weekend's newsletter.
Very innovative. And you did the right thing. You like checked at other people's ideas and you kind of took the best. That's how I learned how to do a lot of the stuff in the garden. I watch videos on YouTube.
Yeah.
You learn things. So text the word extra, EXTRA, to 855-616-1620. It takes you right there. It's fun. You can actually... tell your friends. There's a subscribe link or share it link, so do that. And lastly, salute to service. Our nomination period ends Friday, so text the word salute. I know I'm asking you a lot in the last minute here, but S-A-L-U-T-E. Got a couple yesterday, got a couple more fresh ones this morning. I need those stories because this weekend we nail them down to the 5 honorees. That has to happen pretty quickly here, and the whole process kind of moves forward thanks to Waterstone Bank. So all of that's in a minute and a half. Looking forward to tomorrow's show. Yeah?
Busy? Yeah. Got a short show tomorrow. I think we're out at 11:40 for Brewers. But more talking. More news.
I like talking more takes. Tuesday.
Talking Tuesday. Yeah. Hashtag.
All right. Chris and Steve, 620 WTMJ.